Travels with Sarah, Point Farms Provincial Park, Ontario, Canada. My elderly dog Sarah and I, having travelled to Ontario from Minneapolis in our big blue SUV, the 13-foot scamp trailer on tow, settled down in this beautiful underpopulated park. The deciduous trees are turning, children are back in school. I am on an unpaid sabbatical from my teaching job in Minneapolis in order to give Sarah, aged 15 3/4, a wonderful last few months of life. This is the pattern of our days at the moment. When the moonlight fades and the sun comes up, I peer out of the window from my warm nest in the scamp, switch on the electric kettle, make tea, sit up in bed and write until Sarah wakes up, and then heave her out of the door to do her business. I dress quickly, it's cold, stash the bedclothes in the cupboard, transform the bed into the table, make another cup of tea, chat to whomsoever is perambulating past the campsite. At the moment it's pretty empty here, but the few neighbours are fascinating to me, in direct inverse proportion to their scarcity. Thus I have chatted up people I would normally pass by, and thereby learned their stories. Take Janie and Hans, for example, campground hostess and host for the month, who spend most of their time sitting outside their RV, waiting for someone to stop and accept a cup of coffee and talk. One morning over coffee, Janie told me about her childhood in Holland during the war, and how she and her mother and siblings were made to watch as German soldiers forced her father to dig his own grave in their farmyard. When it was done, the soldiers told him to lie down in the dirt, pointed their guns at him, then instead of shooting, laughed and drove away. I said, "You must write this down for your grandchildren." Another time I sat with her and Hans, also Dutch, outside their trailer, and I heard about their meeting at a dance hall in Canada and their courtship after the war when they were still in their teens, and how later, when they were married with young children, Hans suffered a farm accident forcing a change of career. He attended a local community college, but dropped out because he couldn't follow the English. Janie made him go back the next semester with a tape recorder, and they replayed the lectures together at the kitchen table until he understood the concepts in this always foreign language. "So you deserve a degree too," I said to Janie. "No," she said, "I'm not clever enough." Nell, another new friend, is camping further up the campground. She has a cooking tent, a sewing tent, a sleeping tent, and a 1985 station wagon, Rose. She lives in Goderich but comes out here every year for 2 weeks. This year she's celebrating her 60th birthday. Nell is eccentric, funny, wild, and energetic. I have heard all of her life stories, from running a goat dairy farm and being a fix-anything woman to becoming a costume designer. She has been in 3 car accidents and 13 tornadoes, she claims, including the one that hit Goderich 3 years ago. As a result, she works with a cane, a 4-foot-long stick that she culled from these woods 20 years ago and carved with mystical symbols that she uses as a walking stick and a weapon and a theatrical prop. I can hardly get a word in edgeways, but she has adopted me and seems to appreciate me and my city ignorance. "I can't believe that you came straight from academia to the Canadian wilderness by yourself. You've got guts, my girl." She hoves into sight around the corner to visit me, calling out, "Ahoy there!" Bearing down on me with her waist-length silvery hair that used to be Celtic red, which is at the moment theatrically streaked with touches of turquoise, and flowing robes on her tall frame. Originally from Nova Scotia, she is full of stories. I want to go to Nova Scotia, but now is not the time with winter coming in and the old dog going out. Or maybe it's the perfect time. Around sunset, we remaining campers stroll to a favourite lookout point and admire the nightly drama over Lake Huron, this part of Canada being famous for its sunsets. Thus, I make friends with Rick and Anna. One night after the sunset show, Anna and Rick invite Sarah and I and Nell to visit. We oo and ah over their trailer, which has 2 double beds, a full bathroom and kitchen, a table, which can accommodate up to 6 people, and the whole shebang squishes down into a flat pack for the road. They plied us with nibbles and pomegranate juice, and Nell regaled us with stories of local ghosts. I was glad to be escorted back to Scampi by Rick and his flashlight, as the night is pitchy black here, sans moon. Sarah rode in her new buggy, a little red flyer wagon fitted out with a cushion in an antique wooden apple crate to keep her safe. She sits there looking very smug and quite regal. When people stop to admire or perhaps laugh, I produce doggy treats for them to give her so she gets constant positive reinforcement for her new and potentially humiliating mode of ambulation. Finding Sarah the dog's wagon was a delight. Finding Sarah the dog's wagon was a delight. I had noticed a man towing an ancient dog around in a little Tykes plastic wagon at the Godrich Farmers Market one day, which inspired me to find something similar. I'd previously thought of an old baby pram, but dismissed the idea as probably being more fetishizing than fetching. I would look like a crazy lady pushing Sarah in a pram. She cannot walk far, though, and is too heavy to carry. I remembered that a rural shop I was in the other day had antiques and a couple of wagons, so I hightailed it back there, and Sharina, the proprietor, remembered me, the American, British lady. And indeed, there were two wagons to choose from, so we hauled them out, and I'm starting to pick up that vowel sound, and put Sarah in them. But she kept jumping out. By this time, there were about five onlookers, scratching their heads and proffering advice. And then Sharina's husband announced that he'd had an idea and returned with an old wooden apple crate, which he plopped into the wagon as if it had been custom-made for it. "You have an amazing eye," I gushed. And indeed, after years of welding and fixing, his wife said, "He can eyeball anything and tell you the measurements, or know if something will fit." This said with more irritation than pride. Thus, I have driven all the way from Minneapolis to southwest Ontario to acquire an American antique of the Midwest. Sharina was nice enough to lop $15 off the price, but then she had wept a little when speaking of having to put her own dog to sleep recently, and we hugged each other. Before I left, she presented Sarah with a miniature ice cream cone, and I promised to visit next year. I discovered during my conversations that my new acquaintances know of Alice Munro, whose short stories are set in this part of the world, but they do not share my passion for her. She's a funny little thing, going around town with her posse. Once again, another prophet not honoured in her own country. Later, I lie in bed in the Scamp reading Alice Munro's short story, Vandals, in which an elderly lady is writing a letter to a friend about an eccentric man she had once been in love with. "No," she wrote, "but what she did think," and she knew that this was very regressive and bad form, "what she did think was that some women, women like herself, might always be on the lookout for an insanity that could contain them. For what was living with a man if it wasn't living inside his insanity? A man could have a very ordinary, a very unremarkable insanity, such as his devotion to a ball team, but that might not be enough, not big enough. And an insanity that was not big enough simply made a woman mean and discontented." Munro's insights have a way of clarifying some of life's mysteries to me. This quote partly explains my disappointment in a good man I was with once. After the passion wore thin, his insanity was not big enough to contain me, and I became mean and discontented. Munro teases out glimpses of the dark underbelly present in many relationships, the mad action of the webbed feet under the apparently smooth waters. One night I hosted Anna, Rick, and Nell around my campfire and plied them with what I had: homemade leek and potato soup, tinned lychees and syrup, and rooibos tea. And Nell sang for us as we hugged the warmth of the fire in the dark, songs from her part of the world, passed down from the British Isles, her pure folk singer's voice floating away with the wood smoke into the night to join the stars.